Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 25th of January, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call, and let's try to wrap up a week that would have literally been inconceivable simply because nobody would believe the news that now passes for normal even a few years ago. Whether we're talking about a rally in Virginia against traitors who would want to disarm honest Americans, or a circus trial on the Senate floor about an impeachment without actual evidence or grounds, this week was truly one for the history books. But I'll start off the recap anyway with something that was scheduled to happen on Friday. As I begin the recording, it hasn't actually happened yet, but President Trump is set to speak to the March for Life on Friday afternoon in Washington, and he'll be the first president in U.S. history actually to do that in person. And I got this story, too, by way of follow-up to something we talked about earlier in the week. Mike Adams and his website Natural News, that seemed to be under a midweek cyber attack, is now back online, and it turns out that what really happened was probably even more insidious. After 2 days of investigation, he wrote, involving several lawyers and a private investigator, we've identified the source of the attacks on Natural News. Turns out our original fears were not quite on target. Rather than cyber warfare, it turns out that Natural News was the target of industry sabotage, courtesy of what he refers to as the vaccine deep state, a secretive fascist cabal of operators, says Adams, with ties to both Big Pharma and the pro-vaccine branches of the various federal government TLAs, like NIH, CDC, and FDA. Natural News has learned that the vaccine deep state gained control over a federal court, evidently in California, and began issuing secret extrajudicial orders to tech companies that order them to disrupt or deplatform anything that is labeled anti-vax in the way of publishers or news organizations. And it's no exaggeration, he notes, to say that the vaccine deep state now runs its own secret court system that issues sabotage orders to disrupt independent media publishers and voices that they want silenced. We've seen the rampant deplatforming of vaccine skeptics already across YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, he says, and that's almost certainly been accomplished via this secret court mechanism, which is why so many vaccine truth channels were simultaneously deplatformed by the big socialist tech giants. He goes on to say that Natural News has learned many other independent publishers are also about to be impacted by the same type of secret court orders. Publishers targeted by these operations are given no notice and no chance to challenge the illegality of such orders. And gee, folks, doesn't that sound a lot like the red flag gun theft orders, too? So they're basically red flagging not only the Second Amendment, but the First. Tech companies are then ordered into silence, he continues, told they cannot communicate with the parties who've been affected. And these sabotage orders are suddenly enacted in secret with no warning at all. You can't find them through regular searches, through court documents either. And one attorney, he says, who reviewed their items was astonished, saying he'd never seen anything like this before. This, says Natural News, they've learned, was a warning shot to prove that the vaccine deep state can now deplatform any publisher they choose to for any length of time they feel like. Even more horrifying, the vaccine deep state appears now to be able to seize any domain name that they want simply by issuing another secret court order to the domain name registrar that holds it. And for that reason, he suggests, any publishers who want to defend themselves against these nefarious actions need to move both their website hosting and domain name registrations out of U.S. jurisdiction, at least for now, where such U.S. court orders are less likely to be enforced. But of course, as we know, it's no long-term guarantee. Concludes Adams, we now live in a nation where any publisher can be taken down, offline, at any moment, without notice, simply because some industry that's powerful enough, like Big Pharma and the vaccine industry, doesn't want your voice to be heard. And that, he says, is what America has come to under the total fascism of what he's now calling the pharma state. From there we go to the recap, and sometimes I'd start this chronologically, which would mean the big shindig in Virginia on Monday that didn't get the Deep State Civil War II kicked off like it was probably supposed to, largely because honest people showed up in huge numbers, a great many of them armed, and sanity prevailed. We'll go into that topic a bit later on in more detail, but for now, suffice it to say that Robert A. Heinlein was again proven correct when he said many years ago that an armed society is a polite society. Oh, and for all the booga 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 evil assault weapons there on the streets of Richmond, every single person in that crowd was far safer than anybody on the streets of, well, the gun-free killing zone that is Chicago, for just one obvious example. So, on to the Senate circus next, and let's set all this up with a couple of quotes. Call it the good, the bad, and the really ugly. The first ones come from just before the circus truly opened in the big top. Even the sellouts in the Senate haven't yet completely caved to the leftist demands, though, for how they want to run this show trial. So the worst of them, like Nadler, the shiftless one, and the scumbag in the Senate, Schumer, were continuing to squeal like stuck pigs. First, we go to Representative John Ratcliffe of Texas, who joined America's Newsroom on Tuesday morning after being named to the president's legal team in the impeachment case, and among other things, described the need to put down the farce here as kind of like, quote, killing a fly with a sledgehammer.
The reason that we are there is to hold accountable some of the House managers, in particular the lead House manager, Adam Schiff.
And given the level of chicanery that's been obvious here, that certainly should happen. Whether it will, of course, is another thing entirely. He went on to describe what a sham this impeachment has been so far, citing the disparity between the way it's been handled in the past, more or less constitutionally, and what happened this time around.
The disparity in the way that President Clinton and President Nixon were treated during their impeachment inquiries as opposed to President Trump. The Nixon and Clinton lawyers were allowed to participate from the very beginning to the very end. They were allowed to review evidence, to suggest evidence, to call witnesses, and to cross-examine witnesses. By comparison, President Trump, during a 78-day impeachment inquiry,
his lawyers were forbidden from even being able to do things like cross-examine witnesses, he said, or to
be there for the presentation or review of evidence. That's a lack of due process and fairness that I think all senators, Republican and Democrat, are going to be surprised to learn. And I think as a result of that, they're not going to want to hear any witnesses because the Senate isn't going to be able to fix what happened in the House.
Well, while it probably won't happen, there have certainly been those that have suggested the way to fix what happened in the House is for the Senate to subpoena some of the criminal ringleaders in the House and put them under oath to answer to the American people for their sedition. But Representative Ratcliffe really did hit his stride when he talked about the irony of what the traitors are trying to get away with here.
The irony of the House Democrats wanting to impeach a president for obstructing House Democrats in a 78-day process where they forbid him from participating for the first 71 days. People are going to find it ironic that the House Democrats are wanting to impeach for obstruction of Congress, a term that the founders referred to as the separation of powers. They can't make constitutional arguments because they don't have any. This impeachment fails. It fails factually, it fails legally, it fails constitutionally. This is going to be like killing a fly with a sledgehammer. The House Democrats had a weak case. Even on a slanted playing field where they made the rules, changed the rules, and broke the rules to their advantage, on a level playing field, it's going to get ugly. I expect a short trial, no witnesses, an early acquittal for President Trump.
None of which sits well with the most anti-constitutional, especially Bill of Rights hater in the Senate, Chuckie Schumer. And yeah, I am taking this out of context because he actually was talking about what the Senate intends to do to his sham impeachment trial. But this one, too, is just plain dripping with irony. So let's call it Chuckie Schumer tells the truth for once.
A trial where there's no evidence, no existing record, and no new evidence, no witnesses, no documents. That isn't a trial at all. It's a cover-up.
Well, there you go. And that pretty well describes exactly how we got here. Because it certainly is fair to ask, why, oh, why are they starting to prattle about evidence, whatever that means to them, now? Which brings me to the really ugly in a piece from Tyler Durden about Remember Where You Are, citing the Chief Justice and evidently much blackmailable John Roberts, who admonished both sides, it says in the headline, after the impeachment arguments, I hope you're sitting down, got personal. First, Jerry Nadler accused Senate Republicans and the president's defense team of orchestrating, get this, a cover-up, which drew a sharp rebuke from White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who added that Nadler should be embarrassed for his remarks, but hey, folks, if he had any shame, he'd have resigned years ago. Quote, we've been respectful of the Senate, he said. We've made our arguments to you. You don't deserve and we don't deserve what just happened, said Cipollone, adding, Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations against our team. He made false allegations against all of you. He accused you of a cover-up. He's been making false allegations against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you, for the way you've addressed this body. This is the United States Senate. You are not in charge here. Cipollone called the proceedings, rightfully, a farce, and Jay Sekulow followed up by saying, the Senate is not on trial. And when the White House counsel concluded, he returned to his table and threw down his papers in disgust. But tensions rose even further as Nadler responded, calling Cipollone a liar in one case, whereupon the president's attorney shook his head, along with several other Republican senators. And that brings us, folks, to this. After the exchange, Chief Justice Roberts said, quote, I think it's appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. Unquote. And come on, who are we kidding? Especially during a farce like this, that's a tough sell. And after all, aren't there still used car lots in America? I bet most of them would be ashamed by the likes of these deliberations. And let's be honest here, shall we? Give me a really crooked used car salesman over Jerry Nadler, Chuckie Schumer, or Adam Schiff for brains any day, folks. By Friday, though, it was obvious that the sham had pretty well fizzled out. TV viewership was way down, and it got so bad that Senate Minority Leader Chuckie the Anti-Constitutionalist Schumer had to desperately beg GOP senators, said Christina Leyla at the Gateway Pundit, to vote with the Democrats to subpoena witnesses so they could keep something, anything, on the table. Said one of their reporters, Democrat House managers for the trial of the president have put the senators through, quote, agony, and they're simply bored out of their minds, with many nodding off, walking around, or even leaving the chamber for extended periods of time. And in fact, nothing new has been shown, and as many people have pointed out, they just keep repeating the same old discredited lies over and over and over and over and, yeah, over and over and over again. By the time Friday rolled around, the shiftless one had been caught lying more times than I even want to recount. And as Kentucky Senator Rand Paul pointed out midweek, it's clearly started to backfire, too. Quote, the more we hear from Adam Schiff, the more the GOP is getting unified against this partisan charade. As for your host, folks, I'll summarize it this way. A real circus has clowns and lions and elephants. This one only has clowns, and they're not even funny. Okay, well, yeah, I guess we do have to add the obvious, and to use the biblical term, more than a few asses, too. Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 23rd day of January, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and since the plague infesting the floor of the Senate is obvious, let's start with another plague, the one coming out of Wuhan, China, and it would seem spreading very rapidly.
As of Friday morning, over 900 confirmed cases of the virus worldwide, 26 officially dead, and now 3 cases within the United States.
And according to tables from Professor Neil Ferguson at the MRC Center for Global Infectious Disease Analysis, that could mean as many as 20,000 unconfirmed cases so far, although others looking at the same data saying, nah, the worst case is probably still less than 10,000, but it's still a big number.
And there are increasing concerns that China's lying about the real numbers anyway, and that they're much higher than the official story. Friday morning summary said China has now quarantined about 40 million plus people as the death toll surges, and there are confirmed cases in at least half a dozen countries around the world.
And all of this comes as even more Chinese cities are canceling their Chinese New Year celebrations, even though it's admitted that many Chinese, including those from the Wuhan area, have probably already traveled abroad
before the week-long holiday even started on Saturday.
And infectious disease specialists have already been warning the likes of the New York Times that the horse is already out of the barn, given the number of people in the huge city of Wuhan and the travel that's already been taking place.
For example,
an alarming headline from the UK's Daily Mail says that the confirmed coronavirus patient in Washington State had not been diagnosed for 5 full days after flying home from Wuhan and had contact with at least 16 people before being hospitalized,
not counting all the other people that were on the same flight with the guy.
Paul Joseph Watson, via Summit News, quotes Professor Neil Ferguson from Imperial College at London to say that this new virus, the 2019 nCoV, and its death rate could be about 2% or so. That would be similar to the Spanish flu. For every 50 people are infected, in other words, one statistically will probably die. And he added, novel viruses spread much faster because we have no immunity. Notes Watson, if you compare the relative populations, back in 1918, the Earth had just under 2 billion people, and Spanish flu killed between 20 and 50 million, or about 2.5% of the population. If that figure was repeated today, a similar kill rate would take out close to 200 million people. Breitbart News says that a physician tasked with developing a vaccine for the prevention of coronavirus-type illnesses says this latest virus is the third of its kind since 2002, and he expressed some concern about the frequency of new coronavirus contagions. Almost like he's implying there might be an interest in these kind of viruses for bioweapons, but hey, he didn't actually come out and say that. He did say this is the third new coronavirus since the turn of the century, and this is serious business. Referencing SARS, or Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, discovered back in 2002, followed up by MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, from 2012, and now the Wuhan coronavirus. It's still very early, though, said Dr. Hotez in reference to the question about what we do know about the latest coronavirus. What we don't know is much more than what we do know, unquote. But he does agree that the new virus probably won't be quite as deadly as SARS, which had an approximately 10% mortality rate.
Michael Snyder at the End of the American Dream summarizes a lot of this data in his article about how Chinese hospitals are turning away hordes of sick people because they've simply run out of hospital beds. The mainstream media in the Western world, he begins, isn't telling you that Chinese hospitals are being absolutely overwhelmed by the number of sick people showing up for treatment. So the truth is that the official numbers being put out by the Chinese government are probably almost meaningless at this point because hordes of sick people are being turned away from the hospitals where there's simply no room for them. And remember, folks, the Chinese city of Wuhan is about the size of London. So, says Snyder, it's starting to become clear that the true number of cases is likely far higher than the Chinese government is reporting. And remember, they have a transparency record, which is basically right up there with the Washington deep state. But what makes things probably even worse is the fact that experts are warning the incubation period for this virus now seems to be on the order of about a week, meaning that people who aren't even exhibiting symptoms yet could be spreading this virus around like wildfire while they don't even realize they have it. At this point, your host will step back and say, when it comes to reporting or commenting on something like this, one of the obvious challenges is some kind of balance between the booga booga booga, be afraid, be very afraid mentality on the one hand. Bear in mind that Big Brother doesn't want to panic yet, because among other things, that might cause the stock markets to go down, which they're going to do eventually anyway, but let's not have it too soon. And on the other hand, the soothing NPR mentality. No, we don't want you peons to worry your pretty little heads about anything, except maybe getting rid of that evil president. Because, after all, Big Brother will take care of you, and if there's a problem, there will be a vaccine, and the fact that lots and lots of people will make a whole lot of money mandating it shouldn't concern you either. So say it with me, folks. Everything is under control until we tell you it's not, and then it's time to panic. So, given that your host has freely acknowledged, as long as I've been doing this news show, that I come from a biblical worldview, and recognize not only that the Bible is a source of truth, but that the advice given in there, when it comes especially to things like blessings and cursings, really can be, and I suspect will, a matter of life and death. We are, in fact, fearfully and wonderfully made, and we have an incredibly effective immune system, able to fight off all kinds of diseases. That is, if we just let it work the way the creator of the universe designed it to, as opposed to messing with it, whether we're talking about environmental toxins, poison masquerading as food, or stuff that gets injected directly into our bloodstream with adjuvants like mercury and thimerosal that can tend to, suppress its ability to deal with real hostile invading organisms. So, like Rod Serling, I'll throw out a couple more things. Submitted for your approval. Certainly there are no shortage of people who would love to see a global pandemic. Whether it's because they expect to profit from the inevitable panic for some kind of a pharmaceutical vaccine, whether it works or not, or whether they're just of the common leftist mentality that would like to see hundreds of millions of people dead and reduce the surplus population. Oh, and let's not, of course, forget the bioweapons developers on any number of fronts who would just love a massive beta test that might look a lot like what we're seeing. By Friday, the Daily Mail, among others, was reporting that Wuhan, China, was home to a level 4 biological research lab for exactly these kind of pathogens. Who could have thought it? Which, of course, doesn't mean it couldn't be natural. And interestingly, whether it's a bioweapon or something that comes, like all of the other pandemics in history before, through various foods that aren't foods that the Bible says to avoid, like pork and shellfish, there's simply no denying that there's a pattern here, and it's consistent with what the Bible warns about. The 1918 Spanish flu, for example, was almost certainly transmitted from pigs to humans. And the Daily Mail today suggests that the virus is thought to have spread into humans from a Wuhan seafood market, where wild animals, they say, were allegedly traded illegally. And of course, let's not forget, China's the world's biggest consumer of pigs for food, and they're currently dealing with the largest outbreak of pig Ebola in history. To the tune of hundreds of millions of pigs exterminated so far, and even the WAPO admits as much as a quarter of the global pig population may end up being wiped out. So is there a pattern here? Certainly when it comes to pandemics, there is. And the science of DNA has established for years that one of the main reasons why diseases which infect pork populations spread so readily to humans is because our DNA sequences so closely match up, meaning that a virus which will attack a pig can readily jump the species barrier, as it's called, and infect humans. And this fact, of course, is well known to biological weapons designers who use it to gene splice other really nasty diseases in order to get them to infect humans. All of which brings me back to the warning. Now, most regular listeners here will be aware of this because many of us who participate or listen here to Hebrew Nation Radio have come to the same understanding. The Torah or instruction of Moses, and that means the entire Bible, has not been done away with. That the things we were told bring curses or bring blessing still bring curses or blessing. And among other things, that means the Messiah did not die so we could eat a ham sandwich. What was not food then is still not food today. Neither our bodies nor that of pigs changed dramatically and suddenly about 2,000 years ago. His word hasn't been done away with because he is, after all, the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and so forth. And if the Bible warned us clearly and repeatedly about really, really nasty diseases, perhaps, especially today, we ought to sit up and take notice. So given that I suspect most listeners will know why pork and shellfish are not food, I'm going to read just a couple of the blessings and curses associated with if you'll walk in obedience to my word. Deuteronomy 7:15 puts it this way, "And Yahuwah will take away from you all sickness, and will put none of the evil diseases of Egypt, which you know, upon you, but will lay them instead upon those that hate you." But here's the one that always raises eyebrows. From Deuteronomy chapter 28, starting in about verse 58, which is the converse, if you won't walk in obedience and observe to do all of the words of this book of the Torah, so that you can fear the name of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, then Yahuwah will make your plagues wonderful, it says, and goes into some detail, sore sicknesses, long continuance, and so forth. And not only, though, will he bring back all the diseases of Egypt that you were in dread of, but verse 61 says this, and listen carefully, particularly in light of all the new diseases, which may or may not have been bioengineered. Also, he will bring upon you every sickness and every plague which is not even written in this book of the Torah. Those will Yahuwah bring upon you until you are destroyed. So let me step back and say, gee, folks, is there some obvious practical application here? Yeah. If we will simply do what Scripture says, eat what it says is food, avoid those things that it says not to do, whether we're talking about stuff that's being taught to grade school kids nowadays, or pawned off as food and medicine by the poison mills, we can without question be one heck of a lot healthier. And particularly when it comes to avoiding some of the diseases that seem to have been engineered to do exactly what Scripture warned was coming, I'd suspect the course of action seems pretty clear. Although if things keep heading the way they're going, it's not like we can't see vaccine mandates and medical martial law right on the horizon. Either way, though, isn't it interesting how Americans are still being faced with the choice of just exactly which God they're going to worship? And we'll be right back. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Collin. We're still talking about stuff that people wouldn't have believed could have been in the news not too long ago. However, this one, which will set the stage for this half, they probably would.
From the rapist former president, frequent flyer on the Lolita Express, and Clintonian liar extraordinaire, yes, none other than Bill Clinton himself.
I bring you greetings from my wife, who, according to the Washington Post last week, has now been the most exonerated person in history. That's a mixed bag. That means you've been falsely accused more than anybody.
Yeah,
unquote. And let me tell you, folks, you don't even know the half of it, because she's been truthfully accused more than anybody, too, and gotten away with more than anybody else ever. Well, except maybe for yours truly.
Good news now?
No, not even good news and bad news, because at least relatively speaking, the news earlier in the week, well, at least out of Virginia, is pretty much all good. And it goes to show you what happens when good, constitution-loving, God-fearing people actually get up and exercise their God-given rights to keep and bear arms and keep their eyes open as well. On Monday, about 25,000, according to most estimates, very much armed and very much peaceful Americans gathered to protest the gang rape of their Second Amendment rights near and, more importantly, around the Capitol grounds in Richmond, Virginia. And in the process, they made it very clear that they would not tolerate what Governor Blackface and the other, yeah, I'll say it, true fascist and disarmament crowd were trying to do to them. They were also armed with a whole lot of video cameras and live streaming, so there's lots of video from the event. And your host will suggest, as I've suggested before, that was one of the major factors in preventing what was almost certainly planned from actually taking place. Because if there are so many eyes and so many cameras and so much live streaming, it's hard for even the gulag crowd to try to claim that all those peaceful Americans there, in spite of what you could actually see with your own eyes, were terrorists. Although, arguably, the waste stream and the far left was, in fact, very much terrorized. Why, to hearken back to history and another invasion that didn't happen, it's almost like there was an American with a rifle behind every blade of grass, and they now fear they might have awakened a sleeping giant, or a couple hundred million of them. So let me kick off the coverage of Fort Sumter that didn't happen as planned this time this way, folks. This was no doubt a beta test, and it backfired very, very badly. It certainly means they won't keep trying very hard to do what tyrants throughout history have tried to do, and that's disarm the peons. While this was going on, there were moves in New Mexico and in Washington State and other places being hidden by the big noise in Virginia, and they'll keep on there, too. But hopefully, liberty-loving, God-fearing patriots learned some good lessons on Monday as well. Among them, truisms that have again proven true. Forewarned is forearmed. And as Robert Anson Heinlein once put it, and it was demonstrated again in Richmond yesterday, an armed society really is a polite society. So let's start with a rundown of what did happen before we talk about what the media, Northam, and a whole bunch of Bolsheviks wanted to happen and pretty much didn't. A law enforcement source working with the gun rights rally in Richmond told the Gateway Pundit that police are estimating about 25,000 people were in attendance, and that as of yesterday, there had been, quote, no incidents to report at all. It was all peaceful. And as you've probably heard, Governor Ralph Northam declared a temporary state of emergency ahead of the rally because booga, 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 the Patriots are coming. And you know what, folks? Here's the really funny part about all of this. If there truly is a tinfoil hat-wearing, demonstrably unhinged, conspiracy theorist nutcase out there, it's Governor Blackface. And if there's a phrase today that really ought to be hung around his neck like an albatross, it's credible intelligence. And let me just read just a bit more of that booga, booga, booga emergency declaration based on his credible lack of intelligence that says the following. Available information, he said, suggests that a substantial number of these demonstrators are expected to come from outside the Commonwealth, may be armed. Well, at least the idiot's got that right, seeing as how it's been the purpose of the Second Amendment in American history for over two centuries at this point, and have as their purpose not peaceful assembly, but violence, rioting, and insurrection. One thing's for sure, folks, wrong, 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 or even liar, liar, pants on fire is hardly a strong enough condemnation of whoppers like that one. Because I can't think of any more hysterical conspiracy we've heard in quite a while than the one he was pushing. And it's pretty darned obvious at this point that the people who were truly well-behaved weren't the ones trying to incite a second civil war, but they did come to ensure that the God-given rights that they and others before them pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to defend, and in fact gave that last full measure of devotion for centuries, would remain, in spite of the likes of a Governor Blackface. Truth be told, however, it might just be because he remembers a time back in American history, when people like him did things like he did, the crooked, lying politicians actually got ridden out of town on a rail for after being tarred and feathered. And it's also being reported by Mike Adams that the overwhelming number of armed patriots at the pro-Second Amendment rally in Richmond apparently caused the Antifa wannabe terrorists and deep state operatives to back down from their plans to instigate staged violence for CNN's cameras. Because although an estimated tens of thousands of armed patriots peacefully showed up and demonstrated at the Virginia Capitol on Monday, there were no reports of Antifa terrorists being willing to show their faces. Of course, they never are willing to show their faces. So, okay, or even their masks on the scene. Antifa, says Adams, simply could not be found, and it's clear they decided to back down. Recall, he notes, that over the last several days, patriots have been urged to roll their cameras 24/7 in order to document the scene and catch the wannabe agent provocateurs or deep state operatives in the act, trying to instigate violence. Patriots, of course, have also arrived armed, carrying literally tens of thousands of rifles and pistols that, of course, if the Virginia Bolsheviks had their way, they would steal wholesale, sending a message to the deep state and its Antifa terrorism wing that violence will not be tolerated at the rally, despite the wishes of the radical left and its anti-American media mouthpieces like MSNBC or CNN. Brief aside here, quick case in point from big league politics, Craig Melvin, MSNBC commentator and anchor of the Today Show, continued the massive fake news disinfo campaign against the Lobby Day gun rights rally in Richmond in his coverage, claiming, quote, thousands of gun rights activists, white nationalists, militia groups, all swarming the Virginia State Capitol. And that, says BLP, has been the mainstream media's MO throughout the day in its attempt to label the event as a white nationalist affair, while by their conduct, the attendees showed themselves to be honest, patriotic Americans. As a matter of fact, says a related story, as of late yesterday, the only person arrested at the incredibly peaceful event was one mass suspect who turned out to be a far-left LGBT activist. Greg Reese, reporting for Infowars.com, said he couldn't even find any anti-gunners at the rally. But in fact, the entire scene was dominated by peaceful pro-Second Amendment protesters. Said his boss, Alex Jones, who reported live from the scene, quote, it totally blew up in their face. The police are now estimating 50,000 people, he said, had come in and were in and around the cordoned off area. They told companies to close all the parking garages so that people couldn't find parking, but there were at least 50,000 people, he believed, standing room only. It was massive, and the real issue here is that everything Northam tried blew up in his face, unquote. Jones went on to say, they tried to create a stampede, tried to engineer something, it failed. They choked, they backed down, and now everybody's going home with a major victory, and Northam has egg all over his face. And again, he, like so many others, attributed the failure not only to the massive number of patriots who showed up bearing arms, but also bearing cameras to make sure that the far left couldn't get away with what they almost certainly had planned.
In other words, folks, what you saw yesterday was the success of the absolute opposite of a gun-free killing zone. And, of course, even inside of the FEMA camp that Northam set up in the immediate Capitol grounds, where nobody was allowed to be armed, they couldn't very well get away with much of anything, given the number of cameras and armed people in the immediate surrounding area. Which is not to say that the Waste Stream and their Gulag to Facebook and the like public-private partners didn't try their censorship tricks anyway. Which is why your host, among others, warned about counting on those leftist-controlled outlets in advance. But to illustrate what I'm talking about, another story during the event from Mike Adams reported that YouTube is trying to block pro-America live streams from the pro-Second Amendment rally in Richmond. Pete Santilli's live stream was taken down just moments before he wrote the article and replaced with a warning message from YouTube that claims, quote, "This video has been removed for violating YouTube's communist," oh no, I think it actually says community, but in their case it's the same, "community guidelines." The live stream was taken down as Santilli was streaming Alex Jones thanking the American patriots for being peaceful but still courageous while tens of thousands gathered to call for the resignation of Governor Blackface. At the same time, the telecom giants were trying to shut down live streaming of nearly everyone at the event, making sure that virtually no one could broadcast live streams without repeated interruptions. And here, folks, your host will step in to say, I can pretty much guarantee you that there were at least a few streams that would have been outside the ability of the leftists to shut them down, certainly without dramatically tipping their hand. And that, too, was probably enough of a reason to inspire them to back off. And all of this censorship, says Adams, goes hand in hand with the CIA-run left-wing media running a psyop narrative claiming militia leaders are the ones that might cause violence at the event. Every media outlet, from MSNBC to CNN, but that's not much of a political spectrum now, is it, is calling the peaceful demonstrators things like fascists and white nationalists. But in truth, as we've reported, but it certainly bears repeating, there were tens of thousands of gun owners on the scene openly carrying guns right now without a single incident of violence. And just about everyone who was there agreed it was the most peaceful, heavily armed pro-Second Amendment rally that anyone can remember. Your host will note that I saw at least one interesting report claiming what we had in Virginia yesterday was the most gun-dense place in America. And this time it probably deserves to be spelled with a C. And the simple truth, says Adams, as is increasingly obvious, is that it's the American gun owners who are the true lawful civil Americans. And it's the anti-gun lunatics that are engaged in actual fascism because, of course, among other things, the Nazis did disarm their victims. And Adolf, of course, is famous for saying all kinds of things about how effective it was that the left certainly doesn't want you to hear. Along with their censorship lies, false flags, and other nefarious acts that the far left consistently blames on their political opponents. Jamie White, also reporting for InfoWars, caught a group of patriots attending the rally who called out an agitator embedded within their group calling for violence. The provocateur asked one of the attendees, "Want to start the revolution today?" he said. "Want to hop those fences and kill that guy?" But nobody in the vicinity was buying any of it. One man said, "He's stirring stuff up," while another asked, "Are you a conservative?" And the third said, "That is not how we are." I think what that guy said was absurd. We don't believe in going in and killing people. This is a peaceful rally. We're here to stand with the people. Whereupon the provocateur, being called out, tried to save face. After all, there were cameras around. "I agree, sir," he said politely. "I'm here peacefully. I wasn't trying to stir up anything." "Well," said a patriot, "you said something so extreme, and that's exactly what the left wants." Said another, "You're an infiltrator. Get the, let's just put it politely, get the heck out of here." There are a number of stories today, as you would hopefully expect, on the alternative side of the web about what really happened in Virginia yesterday. One called Watchmen Incorporated is headlined, "Deep State Snipers Over Unarmed Virginians." And this, it says, is the real reason why commie Governor Blackface Northam prohibited drones from the area of the Richmond government grounds. Northam wanted to keep his snipers hidden from the public. But a few daring patriots responded by flying photographic drones in violation of the prohibition and captured what it was Northam wanted hidden. Although, let's be honest, folks, absolutely no one is surprised by that news because the whole point of gun control is to make sure that only the peons are properly disarmed. You know, Big Brother will guarantee his minions the beast-granted right to keep and bear arms. Meanwhile, they say the global fake news media chopper, that turns out to have evidently been a surveillance chopper, kept those snipers out of view of the public. In other related stories, a petition to recall Governor Blackface, a.k.a. Northam, has already gathered more than 65,000 signatures out of 75,000, at least at one point, required. Although you could probably look for Northam and the leftists to change the number of petition signatures, too, before they allow themselves to be recalled for violation of their oaths. You can certainly expect more lies from the Waystream media, too, of things like this. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, SICK correspondent, gave misleading accounts of videos that he took at the Lobby Day gun rights rally in Richmond, reported Big League Politics, initially posting a video of protesters supposedly chanting, "We will not comply," which would have certainly been a constitutionally appropriate thing for them to chant anyway. But the truth is, the protesters were actually reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. The Nobody Believes Communists Anyway correspondent faced instant criticism from Twitter observers who pointed out the whopper, including Matt Whitlock, advisor for the National Republican Senatorial Committee, who fired back at the video, claiming, quote, "At some point, this starts to feel like a concerted effort by major media companies to smear." Yesterday, said Whitlock, Ben Collins with a viral tweet calling this a white nationalist rally. Today, this guy tweets a video of the Pledge of Allegiance saying it's a "We will not comply" chant. And even though he corrected himself, says Big League Politics, it's clear that Waystream journalists are heading into this event attempting to paint false narratives, and especially attempting to paint Second Amendment activists, or anybody that can read the Bill of Rights, it seems, as extremists. And that particular whopper, of course, was debunked by Breitbart under this headline, "Watch as a Second Amendment activist who just happens to be black responds to the media smearing the Virginia protesters as, quote, nothing but white rednecks," whereupon they, of course, provide the video. Says the piece, a black Second Amendment supporter at the January 20th rally pulled back the covers on the establishment media's attempts to paint the pro-gun Virginians as nothing but white rednecks, saying, quote, "I do not in any way, shape, or form support Governor Northam and the Democrats' gun control. What I also don't support is the fact that every news piece you've seen on this weekend, they've always brought up the issue of race, as though it's nothing but white rednecks and hillbillies out here who care for the Second Amendment," he continued, "when actually black Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Americans in general care about the Second Amendment. And let's not forget, so of course do some actual, honest, oath-keeping sheriffs, deputies, and police officers, among which Grayson County Sheriff Richard Vaughn and his delegation was seen voicing his opposition to the new anti-constitutional gun control measures being discussed in the Virginia State Legislature, saying, quote, "If these bills go through as proposed, they will not be enforced. They are unconstitutional. We support upholding the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Virginia. That's what we will do," unquote, said the good sheriff. And lots of videos have appeared showing Vaughn and the others carrying a sign reading, "We support the Second Amendment." The Grayson County Sheriff's Office posted other pictures taken during the gun rights rally in Richmond, capturing images of thousands of participating rallygoers. And just in case you're curious, Grayson County is located on the southeastern edge of the state, and those from the county had to travel about 270 miles to join the protest at what now passes for the state capitol. Sheriff Vaughn wasn't done, though. He later appeared with Laura Ingraham on Monday night following the massive rally and said the following, "It was definitely not a state of emergency. I spent several hours in the crowd in uniform with two of my deputies and some of my constituents. We met some of the best people in the country. We met people from Florida, Pennsylvania, militia groups, people carrying Armalite rifles. Everybody there was armed. And they estimated about 60,000 people," he said, "yet there was not a single person even arrested. Well, not counting that masked LGBTQ nutcase." But, he said, "You know, the governor made a statement today that law enforcement did a great job de-escalating the crowd. And I agree, law enforcement did do a great job, but there was no de-escalation needed." Unquote. So let me make a couple of observations by way of the bottom line today.
It was a very good thing that a whole lot of people who can still understand what God-given rights mean as opposed to government-granted privileges decided to get up and actually go and do something about it, at least in terms of petitioning a government that put their hands on a Bible and has obviously lied through their teeth about what's expected of them, now that they've been reminded of that oath by the people who were there. And one major hurdle is over. That was all done without a single shot being fired in anger or anybody even being hurt. By sheer numbers, any agents provocateurs in the crowd were basically forced to back down under the glaring spotlight of publicity, and whatever plans they had didn't come off. Which leads me to throw out one more speculation on the table, although it's more like a lead pipe cinch. As soon as that glaring spotlight of publicity is gone, they'll be right back at it. And the news from the rest of the week clearly brought that home. And to make the point, just two quick headlines. The first from Jose Nino at BLP. Florida Republican senators, sick, sell out gun owners there by voting for yet another massive gun grab. Senate President Bill Galvano is among those pushing yet another massive anti-constitutional gun control bill in formerly free Florida. He was one of the primary architects of the Parkland gun control bill as well. And yeah, it looks exactly like the kind of thing Governor Blackface would just love to sign too. And Dave Hodges has a piece up too about how New Mexico is intending to become the latest Second Amendment confiscation state. They obviously don't care about their oath either. So I think the case is certainly made. They're already obviously working hard in other areas where the glaring spotlight of publicity isn't shining to do the same blankety-blanking thing while people are distracted. And there are plenty of distractions nowadays. But one thing has been demonstrated very clearly, folks. Regardless of who actually said it, whether it was an Irish politician named John Philpot Curran, or Thomas Jefferson, or a whole bunch of other people, it's still true. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And let me illustrate that point with a few more quotes from a new set of videos being released by James O'Keefe and his Project Veritas, exposing the types of mentality that congregate to folks like socialist or communist, take your pick, Bernie Sanders. Last week, of course, there was a Bernie Sanders field organizer named Kyle Jerk, or is it Jurek, who praised Joseph Stalin and insisting that there was a legitimate reason for the use of gulags. He also told an undercover Project Veritas journalist that, quote, effing cities will burn if Trump is allowed to be reelected. But no, that Bolshevik was hardly alone. This week, Project Veritas released a new undercover investigation, including footage of yet another Bernie Sanders operative, one named Martin Weisgerber, calling for guillotines and revolution, saying, quote, all straight up get armed. I'm ready for the, well, they're really big on this term, effing revolution, adding guillotine the rich. And he, too, favors sending Republicans to re-education camps. Which is, of course, yet another reminder of what's been done to the rule of law. As if we needed one, given bioengineered booga 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 pandemics or the plague of Congress. And I'm just going to read the headline from the Gateway Pundit and Jim Hoft. UN Human Rights Sick ruling claims that climate refugees, yes, that's their new term, cannot be returned back to their home country. Did you hear that, United States? And instead, the U.S. must open its borders to all. Literally, says Hoft, anyone can now claim the new climate refugee status, opening U.S. borders, if at least the United States allows this to pass for law too, for good. So now, he says, the left has combined their open borders BS with junk science to create climate refugees. And here they quote the Central Tibetan Administrator and the so-called ruling that says it is unlawful for governments to return people to countries where their lives might be threatened by the climate crisis, according to a new landmark ruling by the United Nations Human Rights Sick Committee. The judgment, the first of its kind, they say, represents a legal tipping point and a moment that opens the doorway to future protection claims for people whose lives and well-being have been threatened, or so they're being told anyway, due to global heating, whether it exists or not, according to experts, and whether they exist or not. Tens of millions of people are expected to be displaced, it claims, by global heating in the next decade.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
And how's that for a whopper?
Now, as for your host, folks, no fan of the United Nations, especially when it comes to concepts like actual jurisdiction and what the Constitution says about treaties with organizations that actually aren't nations and really weren't treaties anyway, and for that matter, were never actually properly ratified by the Senate, but still don't have the authority to override the Constitution regardless. It seems like the famous, perhaps apocryphal, but still apropos quote from President Andrew Jackson when it came to a Supreme Court decision he wasn't intending to enforce still fits perfectly here. He said, "John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it." And that's the least that the United States ought to say to a so-called Human Rights Commission that doesn't even recognize the rights in the bill thereof of this nation. But wait a minute, neither does Congress. Neither does most of what passes for government now in Virginia, or California, or New York, or Chicago, or... Well, wait a minute. Are we starting to see the pattern here? If we don't, folks, real soon it'll be too late.